Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP at yourfinancialchoices.com, and you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org, and podcasts are available there as well. Under Public Affairs, just scroll down for Your Financial Choices and see all the topics we've covered in the past. Today is December 2nd, 2020. Time has gone very, very fast this year. The markets were pretty flat today, with the Dow closing at 29,883, the NASDAQ at 12,349, and the S&P at 3,669. Tonight, I'm going to cover employer stock benefits. Now, I know this isn't a topic that probably a lot of people might think applies to them, but for the people that it does apply, it can get quite sometimes difficult to understand or to navigate. And if I have time, I can touch at the end of the show about some, you know, other kinds of employer benefits that people should kind of have on high alert. So we will get into it. If you have questions this evening, you can give us a call at 610-758-8810. Lori C. is in the studio with us this evening. Sorry, can't speak tonight. She is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic. I'll do my best to answer them. You can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live, you can give your question to Lori and she'll write it down and bring it into the studio for me. Again, that phone number is 610-758-8810. An email is also available through the Your Financial Choices website at yourfinancialchoices.com. So again, tonight, talking about employer stock, and that could come in a number of different forms. So I'm going to try to give some highlights to each because it can get complicated. And when you work for a larger corporation that is public corporation that has stock, there could be a number of ways that you may have opportunities to acquire that stock or be given that stock or awarded that stock. And so sometimes it's kind of nice to understand what it all means. So the financial world will use acronyms for this or letters like ESPP, NQSO, ISO, RSUs, ESOPs, and that adds to that confusion. So I will kind of cover tonight some of what those letters mean. And for example, employer stock purchase plan, non-qualified stock options, incentive stock options, restricted stock units. There is something called the restricted stock award and an ESOP, an employer stock ownership plan. Some of these we really don't see as much as we used to. Even when I started at a financial advisory firm, we saw a lot of ISOs, incentive stock options, saw them, you know, fairly regularly. I can't remember the last time I saw someone come in with an incentive stock option, but they still could be up out there, so I can touch on that. We still see, I would say, some non-qualified stock options, more for people who are kind of on the retiring side who might have been awarded some of these you know, in recent years and have like a 10-year vesting window or exercise window, excuse me. And what we really see more, I would say, would be restricted stock units or restricted stock, sometimes people might just call it, as part of compensation. So we see that more. And frankly, I'm not quite sure all of the reasons why it has evolved this way. I understand why we don't see incentive stock options as often anymore, but not quite sure why we've even kind of moved away from the non-qualified stock options as much and see more of the restricted stock units. So employee stock purchase plan is something kind of different than what I would call stock options. An employee stock purchase plan, and I pulled some information from Fidelity because even with employee stock purchase plans, we're not seeing them as often, but companies do offer them, and there are companies' names that you would recognize, like Goldman Sachs and Salesforce. I think Paychex might have one. So there are companies that have employee stock purchase plans today, and this is one, I would say, benefit that if you are looking for work or thinking about changing jobs, I will tell people you want to make sure you understand all of the benefits that are going to be offered to you when you're comparing taking one position over another position. So, for example, when someone goes to apply for a job, you're not only looking at what they're going to pay you in compensation, like hourly or salary, you also want to look what other kinds of benefits they're going to give. So, for example, a 401k match or something like this, an employee stock purchase plan, or do they do stock awards eventually? You want to kind of include that in the column of an extra benefit to consider when you're comparing where to go work next. So what is an employee stock purchase plan? An employee stock purchase plan is a type of, and this is from Fidelity.com, is a type of broad-based stock plan that allows employees to use after-tax payroll deductions to acquire their company's stock, usually at a discount, up to 15%. So the rest of us would be buying it at, you know, market value, whatever was going on. If you're an employee of these companies that offer it, you could have an opportunity to buy this stock at a discount and up to 15%. So I would suppose that that discount depends on which company it is and what their plan provisions are. There could be some tax their favored treatment to this, and let me explain. So there is something called a qualified Section 423 plan, which is a stock purchase plan that allows employees under U.S. tax law to purchase stock at a discount from fair market value without any taxes owed on the discount at the time of purchase. And in some cases, a holding period will be required for the purchased stock in order to receive favorable long-term capital gains tax treatment on a portion of your gains when the shares are sold. So I'm going to try to interpret this a little bit. And there is something also called a non-qualified employee stock purchase plan, but I'm not going to get into that. There's just too much to kind of cover tonight. But when you get this discount, they're letting you buy it at a discount. And as we said, if it's in a qualified plan, there's no tax due. Eventually, if you meet particular criteria for this purchase of this employer stock that you made, you're going to have some tax-favored treatment. So in a simple example, if I pay $8.50 for stock that is trading at $10 a share today, I got a discount. That seems like it should be compensation. Well, when I first purchase it, they're not going to deem it as compensation. But if that share turns into $20 and I meet the criteria, the holding period that I have to meet to have this all qualified, the IRS tells us that we only have to pay ordinary income on that discount benefit because that was a benefit given to us, kind of like compensation. We pay ordinary income on that discount. But the difference between the market and the eventual sale price, in my story, it would be another $10 of gain. That gain's going to be long term. And that's, again, if we're holding it a particular period of time and following all the criteria. So you can see where having opportunity for employer stock in some way, and in this example of employer stock purchase plan, there is some incentive, some gain, some benefit to participating in one of these programs. I'll talk a little bit more about some of the criteria for that when we come back from this first break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. Podcasts of prior shows are also available at wdiy.org. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and you can talk live on air with us. Or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, just give your question to Lori C., and she'll write it down and bring it in. And it doesn't have to be related to our particular topic this evening, which is employer stock benefits, basically, is what I'm calling it. We've started talking about employee stock purchase plans, and that this is typically available to employees. There usually is a plan. There should be a plan document which will describe who can participate and how it works. There is an offering period for this. It is through payroll deduction. You have to elect how much you want to contribute. According to the Fidelity article, it says under most plans, you may elect to have a maximum of 15% and a minimum of 1% of your compensation withheld each pay period. And the company sets that forth in their plan document. But under federal tax rules in a qualified Section 423 plan, in no case can you purchase more than $25,000 worth of this stock in any calendar year. So again, it's usually through payroll deduction. Money goes into an account and probably is accumulated until you can buy the stock. And again, it's at that discount. You can eventually sell that stock. There are what we call disqualifying dispositions and, of course, a timing element to be able to get the real benefit on the long-term value of on that stock. So on the Fidelity site, one of the questions was, when may I sell my stock in an employee stock purchase plan? Employees can generally sell shares purchased through the employee stock purchase plan at any time. However, if the shares were purchased under this qualified 423 plan, the tax consequences will be different depending on how long you have held the shares. To get a favorable tax treatment, you have to hold the shares purchased under the plan at least 1 year after the purchase date and 2 years after the grant date. So that's where you get that extra benefit, where the ordinary income is basically on the discount and the long-term gain is on the value, you know, above that after you've held on to the stock for a while. Will the company withhold taxes upon sale of stock purchased under the plan? Most employers do not withhold any taxes on purchases in a qualified plan. However, the ordinary income recognized upon a disqualifying disposition is taxable compensation that your employer should report on the form W-2. So that, again, the disqualifying disposition is you didn't hold it the length of time you needed it to get that more favored tax treatment. So I'm going to move on to talk about non-qualified stock options. So employee stock purchase plan, discount on the purchase of the stock, hold it long enough, and you know, you get some tax benefits on that. You have to weigh that against, you know, other factors in your life, like your cash flow, your debt, whether it makes sense to get something at this discount. It could be a really good deal if you believe in the company and, you know, understand the implications and the risk of investing in the company in which you work. Sometimes we caution people, you don't want to put all your eggs in one basket. So you really want to evaluate if it's something that makes sense for you. So what are non-qualified stock options? I went to bankrate.com for this, but non-qualified stock options are stock options that do not receive favorable tax treatment when exercised, but do provide additional flexibility for the issuing company. Gains from non-qualified stock options are taxed as normal income. The company grants non-qualified stock options. That grants non-qualified stock options can deduct the cost as an operating expense, while no such deduction is available for incentive stock options. This was the crux, I believe, of why so many companies moved away from incentive stock options. I think at one time there was some deductions or expense write-off for incentive stock options. There were some changes to tax law, and so it wasn't as attractive to do that anymore, but those still qualify for the non-qualified stock options. And basically, Bankrate goes on to talk about how it's almost deemed some kind of deferred compensation practically, because the company is giving the employees the right to purchase a given number of company shares at a fixed price. And they call that grant price or the strike price. And after a set amount of time has gone by, holders generally exercise stock options when the market price has risen above the grant price. We call that in the money. That gives them a discount on the shares, and they either hold the shares obtained in the exercise of a stock option or they sell them immediately for a profit. So basically how non-qualified stock options work is the company will grant X number of shares to an employee at a price, and there will be a vesting schedule and it could be like 3 years a cliff, or it could be over 5 years. And what you're watching for as an employee is the value of the stock, if it's going up. If I'm granted a stock option at $10 a share in, you know, 2020, and in 2022, 2023, I got to write this down, 100 shares at $10 a share in 2020, and in 2023, let's say I had a three-year cliff, and in 2024, I can exercise 100 shares at $10. If it is now worth $50 a share, I'm only paying $10 for those shares, which is pretty good if it's now worth $50. So here's what happens with non-qualified stock options. I can, you know, front the money myself at $10 a share. So $10 a share on 100 shares is $1,000. If I have that, I can exercise those shares. And then I could have 100 shares, and then I would hold them. And if I hold them for a year, then that gain is going to be, you know, long-term capital gain. If I, the non-qualified stock options, on the day I exercise, if it's worth $50, that $40 is going to be ordinary income. So non-qualified stock options, it would be ordinary income. And so you still are receiving a benefit, though, because you only paid $10 for it, yet you got the value of $50. Typically, what we see is called a cashless exercise, and people will let the sale of the shares pay for the cost of the shares. It's called a cashless exercise, and typically companies work with big custodians like Fidelity or Morgan Stanley or Merrill Lynch, who will factor that all in for you and track it for you. So what happens is if you have now paid $10 as your exercise price and it's worth $50 and it's a non-qualified stock option, so it's actually the difference in that discount, the 50 to the 10, that's $40, that is considered ordinary income on your W-2, which makes your cost basis in that share now $50 a share. It's at this point now, if you hold it for longer than a year, any gain after that exercise date would be long-term after 1 year. And then that would be, regular capital gains tax rates on long-term holdings, kind of what we're used to. All right, folks, we're at our second break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. I'd also like to mention this evening, before we get back into our topic about stock benefits, employer stock benefits, is our local Lehigh Valley SCORE has on their website, lehighvalley.score.org. It looks like they're resuming some of their programming, albeit online. And they have a program called, under Business Smart, Ready, Set, Go. And it's a program by the Small Business Administration, which has smart steps to start your business. And it is online. And I believe it's starts Thursday, January 7th, 2021. And it could be a number of programs, and it said that you can attend more than one. So that's January 7th, 2021. For anyone who's interested in starting up a business, they have a lot of resources. So that's lehighvalley.score.org. So we appreciate getting those updates from Lori C. She pulls those for us. I think it's been quite some time since we had someone from Lehigh Valley SCORE on, but they have a lot of nice mentorship programs for people who are either starting a business, closing up a business, transitioning a business. So a lot of resources from local professionals and mentors in our community. So it's a great opportunity and program that they have, lehighvalley.score.org. So talking about employer stock benefits, we were talking about employee stock purchase plans and that discount and the benefits of that and following the criteria under the plan document that your employer would provide if you have a company that does offer employer stock purchase plans. We talked about non-qualified stock options. Again, non-qualified stock options. A company issues you an option to buy their employer stock, the company stock, at a particular price. And there's dates that you have to follow, and those could be different. There's vesting dates. Maybe if they give you 300 shares, you could exercise 100 shares maybe after the first year, another 100 shares after the second, and then a last 100, or it might be over a five-year period. It depends. So you would just have to read the plan document for that. The benefit there is that you're paying hopefully a lower price, and that's the time you would exercise. If the exercise price was less than the market value, that means you're in the money. But recall that you do pay ordinary income tax on the difference between what you paid for it and what the market price is. That gets included in your wages, is subject to all the regular taxes. There's usually a little code on your W-2, acknowledging that you had these stock options. And you can do something called a cashless exercise. That's what we probably see the most often, because quite often people don't have the money to outlay for the purchase of the stock options, and the companies can do a cashless exercise. So they sell the enough of the stock to pay the taxes and then to give you the difference. If you decide to hold those non-qualified stock options, then the cost basis is the $10 that you paid in the exercise plus the difference that they included in your wages, which, you know, basically brings you up to the fair market value on the date you purchased it. So that becomes your cost basis, and then you have to hold it for another year to kind of get that long-term treatment on any future gain. And you know, you can sell it too. You don't have to keep it at all. You can do pretty much what you want there. So that's non-qualified stock options. Incentive stock options, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, we really don't see as much anymore. You know, if someone is still getting them, it would be fun to hear. But for the most part, we don't really see them that much, but I will mention them. And I previewed an article by Mark Cusson that was posted to Investopedia on an introduction to incentive stock options. And it says one of the major benefits that many employers offer to their workers is the ability to buy company stock with some sort of tax advantage or built-in discount. And that incentive stock options are one of them. It's a popular measure of employee compensation received as rights to company stock. Quite often we see this for top, you know, employees, or particular top of a type of employee stock purchase that intended to retain key employees. They often have more favorable tax treatment than other types of employee stock purchase plans. And so incentive stock options could still be out there. Maybe we don't see it because I'm not always working with, you know, the top executives of a firm. But one of the reasons that I think we saw these go away back, you know, again, when I started doing this in the early 2000s, we had more and more taxpayers subject to alternative minimum tax. So the idea with an incentive stock option is that you could get these stock options and not have to pay the income tax on the difference between the exercise price and the fair market value until you sold them, which is different than the non-qualified stock options. But the issue with the incentive stock options and alternative minimum tax, as I mentioned, so you didn't have to pay tax on them for regular tax purposes until you sold them, but it was considered a preference item for alternative minimum tax. So the difference between that, the exercise price and the fair market value, for regular tax purposes, not included in income until you sold it, but for alternative minimum purposes, it was included. So basically what you had is people who had the incentive stock options, if it was going to be included for alternative minimum tax purposes anyway, and generally, you know, people would in this category were subject to alternative minimum tax, they had no incentive to really hang on to those. So they would just kind of sell them anyway. So those kind of seem to go by the wayside for a number of reasons. I'm not going to act like I have any kind of expert knowledge in that area because I don't, and because I don't see them very much, nor have I worked with companies who have them really. What we really see much more these days is something called restricted stock units, RSUs. And one thing that makes this difficult, I think, for people to understand and why we have to have a radio show talking about, you know, financial topics is because in the world, in the financial world, it gets confusing. And it's a lot of times because people put different names to some of these, we use different names to represent, aspects of financial our financial lives. So RSUs is what I'm used to calling them. That's what I've been using. And then I'll be talking with a client and they'll say, yes, I got, you know, blah, blah. And I'll think, whoa, what was that? I've never heard of that. And it's basically a restricted stock unit. It's just that the company decided to call it something else to make it sound different, I guess. It's like when I see people with a 401k plan and they say, well, I have a savings plan at work. Well, what's a savings plan at work? Oh, as I, you know, look under the hood, it's a 401k. Well, 401k is what most of us are used to, you know, understanding at this point, that it's a retirement plan, an employer retirement plan. But, you know, companies put their own label on it, and then all of a sudden we don't understand what we're talking about. So when I come back from this next break, we're going to talk about restricted stock units and a few other things. And if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Good evening, WDIY Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm Shondi Gray. It is now 6:30 and you're 39 degrees with clear skies. Lehigh Valley weather tonight will be mostly clear, low 29. Thursday is going to be mostly sunny, high 48. Thursday night, mostly cloudy, low 33. And for your Friday, a chance of snow and rain, high 47. Friday night, 50% chance of rain, low 35. And for your Saturday, rain likely, high 52. Saturday night, 50% chance of rain, low 34. Now, back to your financial choices with Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Shondi. Welcome back, folks. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. Kind of a bit of a different topic tonight, talking about employer stock benefits. Not everyone has them, so I know this might be addressing a smaller audience, but worthwhile talking about nonetheless. But if you have questions, you can be off topic as well. So the number is 610-758-8810. So talking about restricted stock units, this is an article, Essential Facts from Charles Schwab. And this article, I like to give credit to people who do these things. This article was by Matt Simon, and he's an editor and content manager at mystockoptions.com. Some of the essential key points, I guess, that he points out are restricted stock units. These are some basic concepts. Are a way an employer can grant company shares to employees. The grant's restricted because it is subject to a vesting schedule. Vesting schedule is over time. So you don't get it right away. You have to, you know, satisfy some time requirement. And it can be based on the length of employment or on performance goals. And because it's governed by other limits or transfers or sales that your company can impose, you typically receive the shares after the vesting schedule. Only then, you know, can you vote and get dividends and things like that. And sometimes companies pay dividend equivalent payouts for unvested RSUs. And unlike actual dividends, the dividends on restricted stock will be reported on your W-2 as wages, unless you make an 83B election. But that's something else I'm going to talk about in a little bit. So vesting schedules, there could be, again, some time for you to work. And after some time, you get these restricted stock units. And the restricted stock units, once you receive them, they're taxed. They're taxed when you receive them. And your taxable income is the market value of the shares at vesting. So if you've received restricted stock units, it's potentially valuable equity award that typically carries less risk than a stock option due to a lack of leverage, it says. And unlike stock options, which can go underwater. Remember, I said a stock option, the exercise price could be less than the fair market value. You want them in the water. Typically, these kinds of units don't go underwater because they're just given to you. And then at the time they vest, that's when the value is calculated. We have Suzanne from Bethlehem. Suzanne, hi, are you on the phone with us? Nope, she is not. I'm sorry. She is offline. So Suzanne called to ask, what is the deadline for employers to send out 1099s or 1099Rs? Thank you, Suzanne, for that question. Because people are already looking at tax planning and trying to get their 2020 numbers ready so they know what their income and tax is going to look like for 2020. 1099s, typically we think of the deadline to get those completed by the employer or vendor or custodian or whoever it might be would be January 31st. And then they have to be, you know, they produce them by January 31st and then they typically have to be mailed like by no later than mid-February. I think the same applies for W-2s. However, Suzanne, several years ago, what was happening was on the investment side, mutual fund companies would have to calculate their capital gains throughout the year. So a mutual fund company owns a basket of stocks, and they might be buying and selling during the year. And at the end of the year, they kind of, you know, do a little tally and see what they bought and sold during the year so they know how much capital gains they had to pass out to their mutual fund holders and on those funds that they're invested in. And what was happening, it seemed like people were getting corrected 1099s, not once, twice, you know, maybe even three times, because they mutual fund companies may not have been able to calculate the correct numbers fast enough. So they asked the IRS, could we have a little more time? And that is what we have seen in recent years. So typically your W-2s, really simple 1099s, like from banks, you're going to see fairly early, if not the first week of February, by the second week of February, because they have to be done by January 31st. But on your brokerage statements, your brokerage accounts, where you have more complicated investment holdings, if you have things like mutual funds, those may take a little bit longer. Sometimes I've seen them come in as late as the end of February. So 1099Rs should be very quickly. So the 1099s I was referring to are typically the consolidated 1099, which includes 1099 INT, DIV, and 1099B for the sale proceeds on, you know, sales of stock and mutual funds. So the consolidated 1099s are the ones that typically are taking longer. But your typical bank 1099 INT reporting interest, your 1099R for, I like to refer to it as retirement 1099. So the 1099R is for things like your IRA distributions, your pension distributions, annuity distributions. The 1099Rs, typically there would be no reason that those would be held up. So those would be, should be produced by January 31st and to you typically by first week of February, middle of February. So good question. Thank you. I appreciate it. I appreciate you listening. So folks with the restricted stock, so you are taxed on it when the shares are delivered, which is almost always at vesting. Your taxable income is the market value of the shares at vesting. You have compensation income subject to federal and employment tax. Some people might not realize that. You're given these stock awards, and it's like you're getting, you know, a paycheck. And it's true. It is a form of compensation, restricted stock units. So it is subject to federal employment tax and state and local tax. That income is subject to mandatory supplemental wage withholding taxes, which for U.S. employees appear on W-2 along with the income. And you would see that even in your pay stub. A company may offer a choice of ways to pay taxes at vesting, or it may use a single mandatory method. The most common practice is taking the amount from the newly delivered shares by surrendering stock back to the company. Remember, that's what I called kind of like a cashless exercise almost for the non-qualified stock options, which kind of is similar in this regard with the restricted stock. This holds or tender shares to cover the taxes under a net settlement process. And the company takes care of all of that for you. It shouldn't be too complicated. All right, so that's restricted stock units. I could go into it more depth, but I think it's a little bit too complicated. And I think, let me see what I can add in general. So restricted stock units, it's usually typically a performance award. Typically, we might see that you have to be at the company for another 3 years. And then after you've satisfied that 3-year time period, it kind of automatically happens. It shows up. I think that you can ask if you want it in stock or, you know, just do that cashless exercise, basically. And, you know, it shows up in your pay and it's all done seamlessly and taken care of. If you leave before you fulfill that period of time, then typically you're not going to get it. It's an incentive, basically. It's an award for your continued participation in the company's success. So if you leave before that vesting period, typically you're going to give that up. So you want to think long and hard about how much you have sitting on the table and whether it's going to be worth anything to you if you were to leave. Now, if a company terminates you, maybe early retirement or something like that without cause, and generally you're going to have some verbiage around how all this works. But I believe if there is some type of change in ownership or some type of early retirement, they may have as part of their plan that you could, they may pay those out to you. All right. So that would be something you'd want to check on as well. Restricted stock awards. I'm not going to go into these very much either because we also don't see these very often. Basically, this is where, again, in general, so if you have any of this, folks, I'm telling you, you just want to, you know, talk to your advisor about it for specifics to your situation, because there could be so many little caveats or nuances to each of the items I've discussed this evening. We want to make sure that you know how it's working for you. But you could be attracted to a company, a new company that's just starting out, that might say, hey, Johnny, we got this great thing going. We think we're going to go really, really big. We got a lot of great ideas. We got a lot of great people behind this. We have this awesome, you know, product that we want to launch, and we'd love you for you to come on board. We just really don't have a lot of money to pay you at all. But we're going to start up this company. We're going to give you shares and in exchange for your work. So it is kind of like, it's called a restricted stock award, basically. And you could have an option at that time when they give you the stock to recognize it as compensation. It's called an 83B election. Typically, you see this with small companies. And if you make this 83B election, which is an Internal Revenue Code section, and recognize the income today, that becomes the cost basis for your stock. And if in X number of years you then sell that stock, if it's more than a year after that you sell the stock, that would all be long-term capital gain. So in recognizing the income today, they're giving me this stock today. You're telling me the company doesn't even have enough money to pay me. Why would I recognize that in my compensation? Well, because the fair market value of that stock today could be zero. So I'm going to do an 83B election, recognize that compensation is zero, and if it's worth $100 a share in 10 years and it's all long-term capital gain, that was a pretty good deal. That's how a number of people well-known have become rich, and I won't mention names, but one of our well-known politicians had this option for himself and made a lot of money. Now, sometimes the 83B election can be made even on stock that does have value. So you can be have this available to you at a you know, a well-known company, a company that's doing well, and it could be part of your compensation. They're hoping that the company's going to, you know, really, you know, launch some great product, and in 10 years again, you know, do really well. So maybe the stock price is $20 a share today, and they give you 1,000 shares. And you're really hoping in 10 years it's going to be worth a lot more. But maybe today at $20 a share on 1,000 shares, $20,000, I have to recognize income on $20,000 under the 83B election. And guess what? Next year, the company goes belly up. So now, in the story. So do I really want to recognize $20,000 of income and pay taxes on all of that when it might not work out? So that's why you have to be really careful with an 83B election and understand what all of the ramifications of the different elements of this election and what it means and what's the fair market value of the stock today. And if they've told you it's zero, then that's pretty much a no-brainer. If it's worth more, then that would be something that you would have to weigh, whether you think the company value is going to go up and if you're willing to pay the taxes today on something you're not getting. So that's an 83B election on restricted stock awards, basically in compensation. And typically, we see it in small startup companies. But I've seen them. I've had people do 83Bs, but usually it's when there's little to no value to those stock shares today. All right, folks, we are going to wrap up in the next 15 minutes. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Thank you to all of WDIY's generous, sustaining members. Setting up an automatic monthly gift on your credit card is the easiest way to support your listening and ensure WDIY remains a strong and thriving public resource. Become a sustaining member of WDIY today. Call 610-694-8100 extension 7 or visit wdiy.org. Thank you for your support.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. We are talking about employer stock benefits and, you know, an array of different benefits. And wouldn't we be the lucky one to work for a company that has them? Because it can get a little complicated. So it's really, really important that if you do work for an employer that offers any of these benefits, please take the time to make sure you understand what they are and what they mean as far as what it means to you, to your compensation, to valuing you, and also the income tax consequences on what that might mean to you as well. So the last thing I wanted to touch on was employer stock in a 401k plan. And that could be separate from what we call an ESOP plan, an employer stock ownership plan. An employer stock ownership plan is a qualified plan like a retirement plan, and there are tax benefits to that. I do know of a couple businesses in our area that do have employer stock ownership plans, but it's privately held. So when you leave the company, the stock kind of goes back to the company. You don't walk away with the stock. What I'm going to refer to tonight is when you're working for an employer who perhaps has a separate employee stock ownership plan as part of a the retirement benefits for you, but might also have employer stock plan in your 401k. Typically, we see this when a company wants to match their employees' contribution to the 401k, and they do the match with employer stock. That's quite often how we end up seeing employer stock in a 401k plan. So there are some tax benefits to this, and they can be really significant. So anyone who has employer stock in an employer plan, you really, really need to kind of pay attention to what this would mean for you. And it has a special designation called net unrealized appreciation that has favorable tax treatment. So in my example, if someone has worked for one of these major corporations in our area for a very long time and the employer has put in a match into the 401k plan employer stock, this is stock that has a special tax treatment that over the years of service where they have continued to contribute to the 401k plan for you in this manner, They have tracked the cost basis of the stock over all those years of what it was when they put it in. So if you've worked for one of these big corporations in the Lehigh Valley that has put employer stock in your plan and you've left it there and have never touched it, never sold it, sometimes people sell it right away. Sometimes people let it just sit there and grow. The company has tracked how much the cost basis was over the years. And let's pretend you've been there a really long time. And the cost basis in that employer stock over all these years is $100,000 in my story. I'm just making this up. And that employer stock in the plan, the cost basis was $100,000. You've been there for, you know, 20-some years. And it's now worth $400,000 today. Let's pretend that was the only thing in your 401k to make the example extreme. If your 401k is worth $400,000 today and you go and you talk to some advisor and they say, hey, let's roll that over to an IRA and you're going to be able to do the investments yourself and this is a great idea and let's roll that money over. You're retiring, roll over the $400,000 to an IRA. Now you have an IRA tax-free rollover. You know, you move it from one plan to the IRA rollover. Now you have an IRA with $400,000 in it. And as soon as you start taking the money out of that, it's all ordinary income. Assuming your retirement age, you're over age 59 and a half, you start taking money out of the $400,000, you know, out of your $400,000 IRA, you're going to pay tax on that at ordinary income tax rates, whatever, wherever you fall with that when you're filing your tax return. But you go to another financial advisor and they see that you have employer stock in the 401k plan and they say, hey, you got $100,000 cost basis in that 401k. Did you know that you could take out the employer stock and only pay tax on the cost basis today? You pay tax on $100,000 today, ordinary income rates, and the appreciation between the $100,000 and the $400,000, that's long-term capital gain. That's called net unrealized appreciation, and it's all long-term capital gain. Well, long-term capital gain tax rates are, you know, typically 15%. If you're in the top bracket and your income's over the top bracket, then, you know, could be partly at 20% if you're making more than $400,000. But under that, the long-term capital gains are taxed at 15%. And you don't have to sell it. So you could take the employer stock out of the plan, pay tax on $100,000, hold the shares. And if you even sold the next day, all of it, the $300,000 appreciation is long-term capital gain. If it grows more than that and you sell it within a year, the appreciation from when you took it out would be short-term. So if my $400,000 turns into $425,000 and I sell it all, I have $300,000 at long-term capital gains and I have $25,000 at short-term capital gains if I sell it in less than a year. But if I hold on to all of it for at least a year, not only is that appreciation long-term, but any further appreciation is going to be long-term. So you could feather out of some of it. You pay the tax on the $100,000 and then just sell, you know, a few shares maybe if you need some money here and there. That net unrealized appreciation retains that long-term value through the short-term period and then, of course, into the long-term period. So that is something very important to know because it could have significant tax differences for you. Naturally, you have to be ready to pay ordinary income tax on the cost basis that you've taken out, but it could be a real tax saver over time, depending on your situation, your circumstances, what is the cost basis. You know, someone walks in and says their cost basis is $350,000 and their you know, the market value of their 401k is $360,000. Well, that doesn't sound like such a good deal to pay tax on a cost basis of $350,000 on a value of $360,000. So that might be, you know, something you'd have to really think about. But for some of these long-term employees who've been with companies for a very, very long time, who haven't feathered out of their employer stock, position, they may have a very low cost basis with a very high fair market value, and this could be of value. And you have to kind of do it in a lump sum distribution with your whole 401k. So sometimes you have employer stock in your 401k, but you also have the other, you know, investments in your 401k. When I mean lump sum distribution, you can roll over the rest of it and just take out the employer stock. And you don't have to take out all the employer stock. You can choose to take out only some of it, 25% of it, 50%, whatever you want. You can take some portion of the employer stock out of the plan if you want, but you just have to coordinate it with, you know, the rollover of the rest of your plan. It all has to be done, you know, within a year. So something to think about. It's awareness that's important. I've seen a number of times where people were not aware of this feature. I don't know if there's not enough education about it, if employers aren't talking about it, or if people just ignore the education opportunities when they become available. All right, so something to keep in mind. Another caution on that, though, employer plan exposure. Employer to employer stock, you want to be careful about how much you hold in a plan too if you're also working there. And sometimes people have had stock options in the past that they may have taken employer stock out of. So you want to be careful of any concentration in employer stock at the same time. All right, I hope that helps. Now, just a few other items I'm going to add at the end of the show here. And this was interesting because I was on the call this morning, or this afternoon, I guess, with a client, a young gentleman in his early 30s, who's a great saver, has accumulated, a decent amount of money. And I had noticed that he wasn't putting anything into his employer 401k. I could tell that by his W-2. And I asked him about it. Why aren't you putting anything in your 401k? And he said, well, you know, because when I started at the company 6 years ago, they weren't doing a match. And I decided I would just fund my Roth IRA. I didn't want to bother with an employer 401k. So, you know, I just suggested to him, you know, you want to go back and if you're in that kind of a situation and double check to see if anything's changed, because maybe 6 years ago it was a startup and maybe the company was just, you know, small and wasn't doing a match. And 6 years later, they're very successful and could be doing a match now. So number one, I said, go back and check to see if they're doing a match. Number two, I said, do they have a Roth feature, a Roth 401k feature? He didn't know. And I said, well, you know, you're saving a lot of money outside of your employer. Well, because he's not putting anything to the employer plan. So he's saving lots of money outside of employer plans. And he loves the Roth IRA. Well, the Roth IRA, you can only put in $6,000 a year in his circumstances. He's young and his income is low enough that he can put in $6,000 into a Roth. Well, if his 401k plan has a Roth feature, he could put $19,500 in it. And he's saving more than that each year. So we know that he has the cash flow to be able to do that. And this is another opportunity for him to be able to save even more tax-free. So the lesson with employer benefits, whether it's stock or 401k plans, is to make sure that you understand what the benefits are. And are you taking advantage of it? If an employer is giving you a match, that is free money. Some employers do safe harbor plans where they automatically put money in for you. But, you know, that wasn't this gentleman's case, I know. But you want to make sure you understand the benefits and that you revisit it from time to time. And I even saw where sometimes people will put their parents as beneficiaries on the retirement accounts at work or on the life insurance at work. Their group plans, you set it up and you kind of like never look again because you go through open enrollment and they tell you, well, if you don't do anything, it'll just default to what you had. And people love that. It's like one less thing for me to do. But you forget, you know, maybe now you're married and have three kids and you still had your parents on as beneficiary of all these different benefits, whether it's 401ks or life insurance or whatever it might be. So make sure you update your beneficiary designations as well. And be aware whether your employer offers short-term disability or long-term disability. We just had a call today at work about, you know, some of these benefits that are available, and some are employer-provided, which is, like, phenomenal. But sometimes if an employer doesn't provide them, they may offer them as an option for you, and you may have to elect to pay for it yourself, but that sometimes is offered through work. And if not offered through work, then you can, contact an insurance agent to talk about whether or not it makes sense for you to obtain short-term or long-term disability for yourself or life insurance. If you have people who are relying on you and you have obligations and, things that have to get paid if something were to happen to you. So folks, the show went very fast tonight. I thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. And it was kind of a fairly complicated topic, and I hoped to not make it more complicated. And I'm not sure if I've accomplished that, but bottom line, check with your advisor or your employer if you need more information on any stock benefit plans that might be available to you or any other employer benefits that may be available to you. That's what they are there for. Your HR people are there for you to be able to ask questions. Next week, I'm going to have a mix of year-end planning. I'm going to start with some charitable giving and have some guests from ArtsQuest Foundation to answer a few questions in the first 15 minutes. And then we're going to talk about some other last-minute planning that you can do. So we hope you can join us next week. Thank you, Lori. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, Shandi. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.